like, check, looking at our levels. Micah, when he sound checks, he goes, yeah.
I thought that's how you're supposed to do it.
I like this noise.
Yeah, that's good. Well, it's Monday.
It is indeed. Monday. Happy Monday.
Eric's at Comic-Con, so we're just three strong today.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago Comic-Con, though, I think we should specify.
He went back in time.
Well, nonetheless, we shall arrive, even if it's just three quarters of
us
today.
And, you know, speaking of three, one, two, three.
Three.
It's very fitting for today's chapter.
Yes.
Yeah, there was some counting being done, supposedly three times.
That's what I hear.
Are we in the show yet?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think this is happening right now. I can smell listeners from here. They smell lovely, like roses and lavender.
That's me, actually.
Did you just get your new slippers?
I did, yeah.
I was trying to make a joke about breakfast that you could smell it because Tyrion's eating breakfast with Pycelle in this chapter, but
yeah,
I don't have
this
one.
This was better.
I do want to mention that Pycelle in this chapter at one point makes a crack at Tyrion and says, you know, some of us are trying to eat much like the people of the city are. Just a, you know, camaraderie, companionship with everybody, going through the same stuff. And Tyrion's like, I like to eat as much as I can if it's available because I don't know if it's going to be here tomorrow. And that makes me hungry because I'm waiting for a meal I'm going to eat after we record. So this
Tyrion
is hard for me.
Tyrion is so damn crafty, like in every sense of the word. Like it's just amazing. Especially these early chapters in the first couple of books. It's such a joy to read these chapters with him because he's so smart that he can set up stuff like that. Like, Martin is obviously smart, but Tyrion is so smart that he can start setting up things like this, and it's like a little mystery within each chapter.
And he likes his eggs. I mean, I noticed that about him in this chapter, too.
Also a good point.
So let's talk about this crafty little man.
Do you want to talk about eggs some more?
Were they hard-boiled? Is that what I was taking away from this?
Imagine if you had a breakfast that was every kind of egg.
Is it
I
not
know,
just
right?
weird, though?
Oh, my God. That. We need Eric to transition us. This
is it
terrible.
Not weird, though,
Speaking
that
of.
These two are having breakfast together? I mean, there's not a more unlikely pair than these two to be sitting down and dining.
It's very true. But, it, you know, Pycelle sort of has an interesting little observation to make about this, too. He's all like, oh, you know, I don't like being up in the morning or whatever he says.
He's not a morning person. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Okay. They're like trying their best to avoid sort of, you know, meeting at the usual time, I think, because they're less likely to be overheard here is what we're supposed to get away from this.
So Pycelle, he's very tentative about doing anything for Tyrion, it seems. And you know, Tyrion has to kind of coax him a little bit, you know, to send out this letter to the Martells, of all people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would think that Pycelle did a little bit of reading before he sent those letters off.
Absolutely.
And what a great plan it was. Because as I'm reading, I have no idea that he's just trying to get him away from the table.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that sort of I actually found really, really interesting, beside the fact that this is just a brilliant chapter in general, is that as I'm reading Tyrion give these slightly different plans to slightly different people, I found myself the first time I read this going, wow, George R. R. Martin like can't even keep his facts straight within his own chapter.
Oh, wow.
Like I was totally getting fooled by everything, you know? But it's everything is in the detail here.
Specifically in the case when he was hunting through his ingredient list. And yeah. I took notes in this chapter. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. My note is awesome herb collection. So that's what I took away from it. I mean, it's a place where you can get basilisk venom. Selena, you mentioned wolfsbane earlier.
Wolfsbane is very good for when the Starks begin turning into werewolves.
Exactly. I mean, he's prepared for many, many things. And what Tyrion grabs from the shelf, we don't even get to know. That's the mystery in this chapter. Another
yes.
level. It's just like he grabs a little thing and goes, and walks away.
I liked how Tyrion set this up. Where he said, I'm going to give you this letter and I want you to send it out. And I only want the response to come to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, they go through that whole discussion about Cersei and how she's a woman and how that must mean that she's frail and with everything that's gone on recently. And I loved how Tyrion said, my sister's frail. Just ask Ned Stark how frail she is.
Right.
I love that too. And I think it's such a great way because I think sometimes George R. R. Martin uses that sort of that storytelling technique to show the characters that are so short-sighted and that are ultimately going to lose the game. It's things like underestimating someone because they're a woman, for example, which Pycelle does is an incredibly stupid thing to do, which, you know, we get someone like Tyrion who sees that everything, and maybe it's because he, you know, he comes from a perspective as well where he's had to face these sorts of, I don't know what I'm trying to say. You get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Became a very sort of fighting for the little people rant, no pun intended, but I think it's interesting to see how Martin uses that.
I expected more out of Pycelle, though. I considered him kind of a smarter guy, not to just play the female card, you know?
Yeah.
He was just like, oh, she's a girl too, so that might be also why you're stepping up to do your job. And I think of it from Tyrion's perspective. He's like, okay, I have this position, and I realize that I'm an imp, and I realize that I'm a dwarf, but I'm a smart dude, and my sister can work, and my brother can work, and I can work, and we can try to fix all of this shit. And that's what he's trying to do. So this whole meeting where Pycelle's just like questioning him and saying, we should talk to the queen about all of these things because she's a sister and she actually knows shit. He's like, listen, I know stuff too, and this is how we're going to do stuff now. So you're either with me or maybe you can take the black too.
Well, I think I see Pycelle, and I mean, obviously, I mean, readers can or listeners can disagree because I know there's a lot of different opinions about Pycelle out there, but I see him as this kind of character that in theory is really good at playing the game, but isn't at the same time. You know what I mean? Like he plays the game and he hides himself and he does the whole disguises thing, but he's no Varys. He's not even a Littlefinger. You know what I mean? Like he's playing with players that are way, way better than himself. And we're definitely seeing that with this whole storyline with Tyrion, whoever he's playing for, which I still think is a bit of a mystery.
Yeah. I think that ultimately he's playing for Cersei. And
do you think so?
We've seen kind of glimpses of that over the course of the, you know, the first book and what we've read so far, and even in the TV show. But I just think he, yeah, but you know what? At the same time, I mean, watching in that deleted scene that we got to see from season 3 between him and Tywin, maybe you're right, Selena. Maybe it's not entirely clear who he ultimately serves.
I think there might be someone else or some ones else, I should say.
You're right. It's ambiguous, and I think it's meant to be the case. I mean, I think it's meant to be the case with all the people, you know, on that council. You're not entirely sure who they serve, if they serve anybody, or if they're serving their own personal agenda at the end of the day, which only seeks to benefit themselves. And you know, I think that's the case with Baelish and with Varys as well.
Definitely,
I have to commend you two for being able to speak so fluently about all these things, knowing the future, and me being alone, the only one who does it. So
yeah,
I commend both of
you.
If you guys are listening and you're listeners, which I assume that you are, clap your hands together because this must be pretty hard to do. Well, I'm alone in the matter, but I think Pycelle is, I'm not sure if he was 100% serious about defaulting back like to the woman situation. Is he literally suggesting that that could be something, or is he
Saying it because he thinks that maybe Tyrion will respond to that and take something away
from
it?
Because it's a silly thing. Like, he walks slow and needs to get somewhere slowly. It's like, well, Pycelle, oh, well, of course your sister, blah, blah, blah. But really he's thinking, oh, Tyrion's a sneaking bitch. He's trying to get all these things.
Yeah, because I think ultimately he's like a Wormtail-esque character. You know, he seeks those who are in power. And you look at, well, and hopefully I don't have to explain who Wormtail is to the audience. But just know that, you know, a character who really tries to align himself with those in power, doesn't matter who they are. And I think that he sees Cersei and he sees Joffrey as those that are in power right now. So as long as he serves them, you know, he's serving his own best interests. And I don't think he sees Tyrion, despite being the Hand of the King, as being somebody who is, you know, that powerful yet.
He's either a Wormtail or a Wormtongue. See, most of our listeners will understand at least one of those references.
But interesting you mentioned that earlier, Zach, because when I was reading through this chapter, I thought a lot about the future, and I thought a lot of sort of the implications and a lot of what's going on behind the scenes and what people's real intentions are. So, you know, having that kind of insight is definitely interesting, going back and seeing what's been laid as sort of the groundwork.
Yeah, I'm sure it's enriching what you guys know later on, you know, because
well,
this is just
even
a,
what we already
look at
know
it.
In terms of the book three and season three, I think we can sort of surmise a lot about these characters. This is when our podcast really gets tough. I mean, you guys, we have so many different versions of canon in our heads at any given time. And obviously as you guys do as well, because not only do we have to think about what happened in season three, we also have to think about what happened in book three, which is starting to get very different. Especially when it
very
comes to Baelish's side of the story, which is what we're getting to next in this chapter. Him talking about, you know, he wants to be the Lord of Harrenhal and talking about Elisa Aaron and everything like that. I think there's some really, really interesting things happening there.
Yeah, this was a lot on Baelish. Yeah. And he seems like such more of a badass now. You know what I mean? Versus the show, just the moves he's making right now with Tyrion.
He does. Although at the same time, then you turn around and then you have him sort of visibly being sniveling about this Harrenhal situation. You know, you can almost imagine Baelish, you know, standing by the windowsill and like tapping his fingers together going like, "Whoa, I will be the Lord of Harrenhal." But then at the same time, you have to then turn that around and go, but is he really just wanting Tyrion to see that, you know?
It's like it's triple strange.
Deception, yeah.
Little finger.
Yes.
I think he wants it. I think he when you learn a little bit of his background, even in this chapter, where he's come from, you know, his lineage, for him to acquire something along the lines of Harrenhal would be pretty impressive and be quite an accomplishment, actually. It's funny, as readers, like, we tend to take the other characters who are of higher nobility's view on Harrenhal as being like this shithole. But in actuality, you know, when they were describing it in this chapter, it's actually a pretty big piece of land and meaningful to somebody like Baelish.
Well, it goes back to what he's done with his very short job so far at King's Landing. He's been able to turn a lot of their imports and exports against each other. And what I mean is he's leveraging the two and creating a new product line, essentially. He's creating all of these new things to make money off of, and he's selling all of them. And so the crown is actually gaining money. They're profiting off of a lot of things, but he hasn't been there long enough to really make up for everything, in addition to also borrowing a shit ton of money from the Lannisters. So, like, on one hand, he's doing great things, and on the other hand, he's also pleasing a certain side.
The Lannisters aren't the only ones that they're borrowing money from.
And here's a piece from the book to give some perspective for the readers. It says, "Oh, he was clever. He did not simply collect the gold and lock it in a treasure vault. No, he paid the king's debt and promises and put the king's gold to work. He bought wagons, shops, ships, houses." That was a good house. "He bought grain when it was plentiful and sold bread when it was scarce. He bought wool from the north and linen from the south and lace from Lys and stored it, moved it, dyed it, sold it." Basically, he's moving shit around. "The golden dragons bred and multiplied, and Littlefinger lent them out and brought them home with hatchlings."
He's a good businessman.
I like that imagery.
For Wall Street.
So he's hoping, "Oh, well, I can go to Harrenhal, and the amount of self-sustaining, self-efficient resources that place has, in addition to what I can export," he's like, "I'm about to turn this into a business." You know what I mean? And I've made all of these friends on the way. So he's moving up hard and fast in the books. And I think it's less apparent in the show. How much might he's working on, even though it's not brute force, but he's a smart guy, you know?
He is smart. Yeah, and I just liked how this scene opened with the dagger. It was one of those, he knows I know that I know that, you know, basically that Baelish threw him under the bus.
Right.
And got him into that whole situation where he got to hang out with Mord. So, you know, it worked out at the end of the day, and he got Bronn.
Who doesn't want to hang out with that guy?
His bro.
Yeah, exactly. So,
things worked out at the end. But I liked how tactical Tyrion was with Baelish as well. He said, "Well, I can also reveal to her Jon Arryn's true killer, and I'll resolve her Mountain Men issues. And, well, if she has a problem going against River Run, I'll just use the soldiers from the Vale against the Baratheons instead." You know, it shows how much thought that he's actually put into all this.
I mean, so much. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, that's one of the things we talked on earlier. It's really incredible. One of my favorite chapters. Like this is why we have a podcast named Game of Owns. It's because of chapters like this.
This was a great chapter.
Yes.
So he's now teed up Pycelle and Baelish.
Yes, Baelish. Both
with
by
different
the way,
stories.
By the way, who goes like, I have all the maidenhoods of the Tullys.
Yeah.
So funny.
He's such a liar, too.
I know.
He's like, well, even if like anyone's.
Yeah, especially.
No one's going to call my bluff here, so.
Yep. Yeah, so he has the two of them. There's mm-hmm. one to go. Two, it says
and it's
in
his
the
best
italics.
Bud outside of
yes.
Bronn.
I know. I feel so betrayed. On his behalf.
And that one already knows about the other two, which I think is great. I mean,
this is the hardest one to trick of all, because he is the trick person. I think it says a lot about Tyrion that he manages, because it doesn't seem that way in this chapter. It's not until later that we get how Tyrion has really used all three of them to weed out the one who's most likely to betray his trust.
Right. And he already knows just by speaking to Varys that Pycelle has betrayed his trust.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because he already let it slip, which mm-hmm. means he read the letter before he sent it out on the Raven. So again, we see Tyrion becoming very crafty in terms of how he's going to approach the situation. And he says that he's going to send Tommen to Dorne to be with the Martells.
Which is obviously not what happens,
right?
As we know.
So clearly the Martells are still a bit upset about what happened to Elia during the sacking of King's Landing.
And this was something that was emailed to us several months ago as like an overarching own. Someone was like, this is the own of everything. Just sit on this. And I was like, damn, this is graphic. And then in surprise, you know, it came up in a chapter that we were doing for the show now.
Tyrion offers to give the mountain over to the Martells, who is responsible for the death of Rhaegar and Elia's children, as well mm-hmm. as brutally raping her. Before he killed her.
Isn't there a very interesting quote from that passage
yeah.
that you
yes,
want to talk
is.
About? Bring up?
Nope.
No, let's bring it up because it's there. I mean, it.
Yeah.
Based on the knowledge that we have, and I think it's been mentioned before in this series that Rhaegar and Elia had two children. However, when Varys makes his comment, he says that the Martells are upset about her death, as well as that of her babe.
Mm-hmm.
Singular.
Yeah.
But there's two children. I just thought that it was weird that Varys wouldn't reference more than one child
especially
known that the mountain killed both of them.
Absolutely. I mean, thinking of whose mouth this is coming out of, which is Varys, I think it's a very interesting. It's just one of those tiny things that you have to pay attention to what Varys says, because we know how many things he's running around doing behind the scenes, or whispering around in his little shippers. That's mm-hmm. a whole different conversation. That's next chapter.
Very expensive.
And Varys also cautions Tyrion about Cersei.
Yeah.
You know, he says, look, you know, this is quite the elaborate plan that you're constructing here, sending off Tommen to the Martells.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to be wary of your sister.
Yeah, because she won't want to give up both her children. But I personally think that it's never been Tyrion's plan to send away both Tommen and Myrcella. I think that because he expects someone to say something to her, you know? And then he's kind of like, well, all of these plans that I have are kind of good. And he'll kind of let the people that he tells it to decide which of them actually come true.
Tyrion is very calculating in this chapter.
He is. And you know what I like too? And I know that, I mean, to some extent, Tyrion's calculation is always going to be for his own well-being, but he does make some comments in this chapter that I really like, such as, you know, he says, well, if I send Tommen away now, you know, if I pry him away from Cersei and Joffrey while he's still this young, he might even grow to be a good man, mm-hmm. which is just fantastic. And, you know, Myrcella and Tommen hardly get any, they don't get any screen time. They hardly get any time in the books either. But through these small, tiny bits, we get the sense that these two children are actually all right. Like, they're not little Joffreys. They are good kids. And maybe that's why George doesn't write about them, because they're boring. They're just sweet little kids.
They're too nice, yeah.
Exactly.
When I read that, I was like, you know, that's probably the best plan for him to be a good uncle.
Exactly.
Just to send these kids away, because you've got Blackwater impending, and
exactly.
it's just, let's get it over with now.
Let's get them away. Because, you know, and Tyrion, you know, he's one of the people that, I mean, everybody, but he's one of the people that thinks most about how horrible Joffrey is, and he really is looking out for his family, which is Tommen and Myrcella. I mean, he's like a double uncle to them.
Double uncles are good.
Uncle squared. Oh, no, that's four.
Dunkles.
Dunkles. Dunkle. I didn't pull a specific Owen out for this chapter, and I wasn't planning on this to be an Owen because it's a little metaphysical, as Eric would say. I just think that, in general, this chapter has cemented what I've been feeling these past few Tyrion chapters. Because, I mean, we feel like we're a good section into the book, and that's true. But this is only Tyrion 4. This is only the fourth time we've been with Tyrion. And I can just say that being 17 chapters into this book and being four chapters into Tyrion, I knew going into it that there's going to be a massive deviation from book to screen. But this Tyrion is much stronger. He's working harder. And even his talk with Bronn in this is just getting a full checklist read off to him, and he's handling shit. You know, tell Baelish to go figure that debt out, that'll be fine, you know. And he's working hard, and he did not want to be a figurehead in this position. And I think that, you know, knowing what I know further from the show and how his dad kind of treats him with what he's done this entire time and with how he handled Blackwater, that sucks because he is kicking ass. So I can only imagine how shitty that letdown is going to be later on when Tywin, I guess, if it's like that in the book, how Tywin treats him later. That's going to be interesting because Tyrion is busting ass, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great Owen.
I've got an Owen, which is...
Do you?
My Owen is something that we haven't touched on at all, which is, you know... Not strange, because it was only mentioned in one tiny sentence, which is that the entire threat of the wall, everything that Jon Snow has been dealing with over the past book and 17 chapters at King's Landing, this boils down to some rotted hand in a jar.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
The person who came to King's Landing with it is thrown in a cell. By Tyrion. I mean, this is just so funny. It's one of the, like, the funniest things about the series is how, you know, you move between, you know, because we like Tyrion, but then he turns around and he totally disregards this huge threat which is happening in Jon Snow's
universe. It's not his fault, okay? Because he hates Alistair Thorne.
It's true. It's very true. I'm not saying it. I'm just saying it's funny because we've spent so much time in Jon's head, and that's all that consumes his mind, you know?
It's just brilliant because Bronn's like... there's a guy here from the wall, and he's like, oh, really? Is it Yoren? He's like, no, it's not Yoren, but it is Alistair Thorne. He's like, shit, no, just damn. Leave him. What's he carrying? A hand? Fuck it. Just what's next?
Exactly, because Tyrion's got so much bigger problems in his mind, you know, carrying out his little scheme. It's just so
funny.
That's
good.
I'm going to go the anti-Eric Skull route. No, I actually consider that for my own, too, where Tyrion basically says, Elijah Thorne, he can go fuck himself, basically, and let him rot for a little while. No, what I said earlier with when the conversation was happening between Tyrion and Grandmeister Pycelle, and he says to him, he says not to him, but in his own mind, if you think my sister is frail, you know, basically just ask Ned Stark how frail she is. That was really mine for this chapter.
Also, something about Shaga would actually eat the maid and then marry the goose.
Oh,
that was a good one, too.
I was just going to ask if we had that one as submitted as Owens, because otherwise we should definitely mention that. But I think someone tweeted that to us, didn't they?
I think they did. We should look at that.
We should transition right now.
And we also got a couple Owens here on Twitter.
Nicely done, Micah.
Which you can, of course, contribute to by heading on over to twitter.com/GameOfOwns. Mariah Pollock. At Mariah Lovegood, by the way, so clearly a Luna fan, sent this in. She says, the air for twitching its nose at Joffrey.
The air.
Just kidding.
The hair?
The hair, yes. I think she meant that. Yeah. Okay.
If it were me, I wouldn't mind eating castle hair. I hear castle hair is great.
It is.
Extra pots laying around.
I was thinking the exact same thing. It's such a tangent. But, you know, they're all complaining about how they may not have enough food. And you know what? Set two rabbits loose in the city and nobody kill them. And then you'll have 80 in a week.
Right. Exactly. It's because people, the rabbits, they have sex like rabbits, and there's more rabbits.
That's right. There you go.
So and they're antagonistic, too, apparently, from what they did to Joffrey. But she also goes on to say, Tyrion has to get the Owen for his brilliant plotting in the Game of Thrones.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. And it's a damn shame we couldn't go more into it today, because, you know, we can't talk all day, but the ins and outs of how they're handling their food situation to me is just, I mean, it's typical. It's what's to be expected. But when you read it on the page, essentially, to break it down quickly, most of the food coming into the city is going into the castle and from there being split around the government. You know, I just find that hilarious that the whole seat, the there's so many people in the city, but, you know, the 1% is taking from the 99. I just wanted to say that until we moved on to the next tweet.
People love that air. Everybody's giving it owns. We've got Borden, too, going the rabbit dodging Joff's bolt and then taunting him as he stood on his hind legs and twitched his nose at the king.
Indeed.
Do we have any houses that's a, that has a hare for a symbol that this may be foreshadowing?
I'm thinking of, like, Brian Jacques' Red Wall series. There's some badass hares from that story.
I'm sure he was foreshadowing that.
Listen, they could be all of the armies. They're magical and they're great with swords. That's all I'm saying.
The hare definitely wins this episode. And think, didn't even mention him or her.
I know.
Earlier on, so
we just get caught up in Baelish talk. It overtakes you.
Yeah,
I know. That's so annoying. Like, when we should be talking about hares, what are we doing?
We got a tweet from Gabriella Marone. Not necessarily an own, but she says, just to let you know, I finished A Dance with Dragons. Love your podcast. Now that I finished, I couldn't live without the show. So both her and Jason from one of our episodes last week have just wrapped up the last book as of right now that's been published, and they're hopping on board.
That's so fantastic. Brittany cool Black also, that's cool. She's sitting in her room drinking wine and listening to Game of Thrones.
Now,
I
that
think
sounds
that's cool.
Like a
we
good
should
time.
All do that. I know.
That could have potentially dangerous consequences.
I remember that one Game of Thrones when I was drinking wine while recording, that was like the best Game of Thrones ever.
I know that you had another own here that you wanted to share with us before we wrap up the show.
Okay.
It's from
what
our good
it?
Friend Shaga, or it refers to him.
All right.
Oh, here we go. Wow.
She's preparing. Can we count? Can we get a count?
Okay. Go for it.
Go on.
Count
for
me
it.
Down. 3, 2, 1.
3, 2, own.
Shaga's more like to eat the maiden, marry the goose. That's some good sellsword humor for you right there.
Yeah.
It's a great one.
Momentary own for Bronn for cleaning up his act and just shining, going
cutting
to the
his hair,
city.
Washing
yeah.
his hair.
Oh, I cut my hair after 7 months.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
It's all over the factory floor, right?
It is.
So if you would like to share with us your owns of this particular chapter, you can feel free to do so, just like all these other listeners did, by tweeting at us at Game of Owns. You can also drop us a line on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Game of Owns, or you can email us at contact@GameOfOwns.com.
We have an email inbox that has labels and tabs and fables, and we would love for you to join that inbox. Just talk to us, because we read it on the show sometimes.
I thought Fantastic. That was pretty good for Eric not being here.
I think we did okay.
And another way, though, that you can give us your feedback is heading on over to iTunes, where you can rate and review the show. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable in the month of August. You should know this by now if you've been listening to the show for the last couple of months. And we do have a couple of reviews here. I'll read a few of them. They are 5 stars, surprisingly.
Yay!
The first one comes from Veronica Parker, who says, Allegory of the Cave fails when it comes to this show. I love the books. I love the show. I love the podcast. There's great chemistry, pleasing voices, and hilarious analysis. Sit yourself down, pour yourself some whiskey, as opposed to wine, and binge listen to this, or else weird things will happen with prosthetics and wildfire.
I like your pronoun choice there, Veronica Parker. Good own / review. Thanks for the stars, by the way. Yum.
I would
stars.
Like you all to go over to hypable.com, which is hypable.com, and not just because we have a snazzy, slightly new layout design, which is beautiful.
Oh. Do you really?
But now, yeah, kind of. It changes a little bit every day, I think. So you should check back every day to see it change. But also because it is the off season of Game of Thrones, so we all need some other stuff to watch and talk about. And also, I really want to write something about Game of Thrones. As soon as I work out what to write, there will be articles.
And it's also a great place for casting news in the off season. I'm sure more of that will continue to be leaked out over the next couple
Absolutely. I cannot wait to find out who Mark Gatiss is playing. But that is a discussion for
continues.
Another time.
Yes. It does
so
continue.
I would like to leave you all with a review today. So maybe we should all say our names and see what happens
Ooh.
After that.
Okay. Zach.
Selena.
Micah. And Eric. I'll say.
And I'm Eric Skull.
Eric, no,
I couldn't do without it. It just hurt my soul.
Zach, I know you've been waiting for this, but this is the first person I've actually seen mention this since our episodes from last week.
Oh, no. What is it?
It's from Amy Christina with the title, I Do. And she says, if marriage between a woman and a podcast was legal, I would pop the question during Game of Owens down to the courthouse right this very minute.
Oh my God. We will. We accept.
Oh God.
Yes,
but
we all accept.
You can have spear wives and fish wives. You can have podcast wives. Screw it. She's our first one.
Yes. Are you guys ready for this? I mean, yeah. I don't know if
it's
I'm ready.
Big step. We accept on behalf of Eric as well, since he can't be here.
Well, if those violins are anything to do with wedding music, then my name is Zach Louis.
Not a red wedding. I'm Selena Wilkin. Or is it?
And I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
Shut the doors!
I hope not.
Goodbye.
Okay. What the hell is happening?
Oh, dear. We are in trouble.
Oh, dear. We are in trouble.